Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. What does it take to make a channel devoted to classic TV series work? Adam Sumrall can answer as Executive Vice President of Family Entertainment Television. And Sumrall will do so when he joins me next. Then settle in for a trio of internet radio exclusive interviews over our remaining 90 minutes. In order, Peter Kosminski, the executive producer, writer, and director of new Peacock cyber miniseries, The Undeclared War, live from England. Desta Tedros Riff, executive producer from Prime Video's adaptation of A League of Their Own. And Julianne Robinson, the Emmy-nominated Bridgerton director, involved with Netflix legal workplace adventure Partner Track that premieres later this month. Also ahead, guess who's plunging into made-for-flick-making? Our classic trivia question and a possible blockbuster fall series, Wednesday, is our show to know. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Spotify, Acast, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, and other podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Wherever you are across the country, around the world, on this Wednesday afternoon, we welcome you to the program about TV's current and future, a special two-hour midweek edition, and believe me, it's a double power hour that will be must-hear radio. 77 degrees, the top of the hour here in New Web, New York, and we invite you to be part of this very special program. All it takes is a phone call from you. So pick up the phone, dial in, and use this number anytime you like over the next 120 minutes. The number you use is 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway you're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. Shy about the phone, no problem with us. Use our chat room. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's Simon Apple 04 by name. It's just waiting for you. And while the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Adam Sumrall, the Executive Vice President of Family Entertainment TV, joins us live from South Bend, Indiana, after these news notes. Last December, Food Network waded into uncharted waters, producing made-for-TV movie Candy Coated Christmas, featuring food personality Ray Drummond. This holiday season, Food and sister Warner Bros. Discovery Cable Net HGTV, their involvement in this format pool, offering two original flicks on each channel, and all four running on Discovery Plus. Food's pair will be One Delicious Christmas and A Gingerbread Christmas, the HGTV contribution, A Christmas Open House, and Designing Christmas. Each film will have cameo appearances by one or more Food or HGTV experts. Fox's Mar Vista Entertainment subsidiary will produce all four movies. Discovery Plus will start showing them November 11th, followed by HGTV and Food presentations during December. Now some quickies. Raimi will begin its third season on Hulu September 30th. Vampire Academy enters Peacock's original scripted series lineup September 15th. Paramount Plus will carry the Taylor Hawkins tribute concert live from London September 3rd. CBS will have a highlights hour in primetime that night, followed by MTV and Pluto TV replays the next day. Shania Twain, Martina McBride, and Tanya Tucker will guest star on Monarch, Fox's country music set family drama to begin September 11th with two episodes. Cold Justice presents its 100th episode in two parts October 1st and 8th. On Oxygen. Discovery Channel and Discovery Plus will premiere Tales from the Explorers Club August 31st. And Shark Tank kicks off its 14th season live in a rare live episode on ABC September 23rd. Actress and Goop chief executive Gwyneth Paltrow and DoorDash co-founder and CEO Tony Zhu will be among the guest sharks. And that is news notes for today. Now joining us live, kicking off this two-hour episode from South Bend, Indiana, the executive vice president of cable channel and satellite channel FETV, Family Entertainment Television, Adam Sumrall. Adam, welcome to the program.
Hello, Simon. Thank you so much for having me.
It is a pleasure to have you, Adam. So let's pose the question we offer to make a channel devoted to classic TV series work, especially when you have a competition like Viz TV, Retro TV, and Tenet TV, and so on.
Yeah, I think what we're following is a pretty tried and true formula that's borne out in the history of cable TV. Let's say, for example, you know, TV Land, Nick at Night, and we've actually hired some of our executive team that we have now from those places. And so as you look at, you know, like I mentioned, TV Land, you look at, they kind of have really pared down their schedule to the really the jewels of classic TV, you know, think Andy Griffith Show and Gunsmoke, and then they get into the more modern fare at night. But what we offer is perhaps just a little bit more variety with, you know, comedies and different Westerns and other dramas. And we think that that's a formula that works really well for us.
Mm-hmm. One thing that Nick at Night and TV Land did was that they put the classic shows in sort of a special image or a special framework where they had vignettes, they had contests, they involved the viewers to get involved. They did special events in some markets, for example, get together statues from classic shows like The Honeymooners or the Andy Griffith Show in New York and other places around the country. They framed, if you will, the network in a particular image or state of mind. Have you done that with FETV?
We think so. We've worked hard to cultivate a brand image of being very family friendly. And this has been very comfortable for our viewers in particular since COVID, when, you know, so many people are looking for, you know, kind of a safe space in their television landscape. You know, as we've seen programming types and options really explode in the past few years with streaming and everywhere else, people sometimes tend to go back to what they know best and shows that they know will make them feel good. And so we kind of work on that aspect in our brand marketing. And, you know, we don't want to present the programming as too campy or old. You know, to us, these shows are really timeless. And, you know, we kind of might pair them with more modern music in our promotions. But it really is all toward a whole brand image that, you know, the whole family can really watch together.
Mm-hmm. How did the network get started? This seems to be a channel that sort of crept up into the parameters of TV. And believe it or not, in recent years, it has really started to gain a very strong following, and the following keeps getting larger.
Yeah, so it was actually launched in 2013. At that point, it was available just to a few systems, and there was a leadership change about 5 years ago, more than 7 years ago. We have a family company here, and my father actually had a heart attack, and he passed away in 2015. And so my brother, my older brother, Drew, he took over. He's now president and CEO. And he made FETV one of his main priorities. And we've been very aggressive about the growth of the network and very purposeful in how we schedule the network. And we've seen that strategy really pay off with acquiring Nielsen ratings in the fall of 2019. We saw our starting point, and it's really been a launch pad for the last 3 years to where we are now.
You're hearing Adam Summerall. He's the Executive Vice President of Family Entertainment TV, available on cable and satellite across the U.S. of A. He joins us live from South Bend, Indiana, as our first guest for these 2 hours of this special Wednesday edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, third of four episodes we are doing this week. Simon Applebaum with you live from the Big Apple, 77 degrees at the top of the hour. Have a question or comment for Adam, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. We have a big 90-minute show to wrap up this week coming your way on Friday. We'll kick it off with Mei Chan. She's the co-developer, executive producer, and writer-showrunner of Surfside Girls, premiering that day on Apple TV+. And there's a lot of good, it's based on the IDW comic book and characters, and so far, very, very good advanced feedback. Chan will discuss a deal involving multi-channel bundle specs, which is creating a new channel for the popular news source from Washington, D.C., The Hill, now owned by station group owner Nexstar. We'll have the general manager of The Hill, Jason Zielinski, on the program, along with from Plex, Vice President of Treating Alliances and Content, Sean Eldridge. And finally, you'll meet a person who is very big on the world of TV Western, and we'll get his thoughts about where the Western is now and where it's going. His name is Henry Park. He is the entertainment editor of True West, and he will join us along with the rest of our guests live Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And coming your way on Monday among our guests from the brand-new Netflix series Partner Track, we'll be talking with our final guest today, Julianne Robinson, executive producer and showrunner, Georgia Lee. That's next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here to kick off your week on Tomorrow Be Televised. Adam, how is the network schedule, and what are some of those popular shows that people are watching?
Well, before I get to that, I must compliment you, Simon, on your energy. It's really fantastic, and I don't know what your secret is, but I'd love to borrow some of it sometime if I could. So our broad scheduling...
Okay, we'll have an offline conversation about that.
Broadly speaking, you know, our scheduling philosophy is, you know, more sitcoms in the morning as we, you know, work through the day. We actually have some morning westerns that lead into the sitcoms. And, you know, as we make our way to early afternoon, we start in some westerns. And then with Fringe and Prime, we kind of get into our dramas. And then in late night, kind of back to the sitcoms again with, you know, Barney Miller, Maude, Bewitched, Leave It to Beaver, et cetera. So our most popular program has been and probably will continue to be Perry Mason. We have a fairly heavy dose of that throughout the weekdays, also on weekends. We recently introduced the Perry Mason movies to our lineup. We're doing a Summer of Suspense with those movies on Saturday nights and a replay on Sunday afternoons. And those have done very, very well for us as well. So.
Perry Mason was really the first big legal drama hit starring Raymond Burr. It ran 9 seasons on CBS. It's been rerun all over the place. You mentioned the movies that NBC made with Burr toward the later years of his life in the 1980s. And Perry Mason, before it was on your network, was on Hallmark Channel and Hallmark Movies and Mysteries. Had a very good run there. Why do you think that series in particular continues, no matter where it's played, to get the kind of audience it does?
You know, I've thought about this question a lot, and I think it comes down to the fact that Earl Stanley Gardner, who's the creator of the novels and the character Perry Mason, he wrote such fantastic novels, and the fact that each episode, or basically each episode, was based off of a whole crime mystery novel means that you have such attention to detail and intricate plots in each episode. There really is not a lazy episode of the show. And because there's so many twists and turns, I feel like it works really well in replays because, and I find myself doing this sometimes as well, you know, if you haven't seen a particular episode maybe in a few weeks or a few months, even though you might have seen that in the past, you're still almost kind of half wondering, well, you know, who did it? And, you know, it's always the best part of the episode, right, when Perry finally gets the killer on the stand or the person on the stand who's going to point to the killer, and then they make that confession. So I think that's really why it's had such staying power.
Right before the final commercial break. It always was before the final commercial break, no matter what.
Exactly. It's such a good formula. And then you come back from that last break, and there's, you know, their little epilogue where they help you understand. Because normally, you know, as you watch an episode, Perry is ahead of everyone, right? And he kind of tells Paul Drake to go check out this guy, and Paul says, well, I don't understand what you're doing. Or Della might say, Perry, what are you up to? And he knows exactly what he's doing. And then in that epilogue, we find out, as he explains more, that, you know, why he was doing what he was doing. And then there's usually a joke, and the episode wraps, and you feel good about how the episode ended.
Yeah. Along with that great Fred Steiner theme music, still one of the classic composing of its time. Another show that you have done pretty well with is Hazel, which, by the way, is also getting some play now on YouTube, which more and more is becoming on smart TV sets and smart devices. Shirley Booth starred as the maid with a great mind. It was created by Ted Key originally as a cartoon in the Saturday Evening Post. It had a 5-year run, first 4 years on NBC, final year on CBS, where they had some cast changes. And Shirley Booth, a lot of people don't know, won an Emmy Award in the first year for Hazel. Again, why do you think that show can and that's a show that hasn't had a lot of rerun life after its initial run on NBC and CBS. There was a syndicated run on stations. I know Channel 5, I think, played it for some years. But really, you may be the first network that has really picked Hazel up and make it work.
You know, Hazel's she's a workhorse. It's not an obvious choice to have on our network, or, you know, if you're assembling maybe an all-star lineup, you could say, of some classic TV shows, it might not be your first choice. But in the time slot that it's in for us at 10 a.m. weekdays, it has always worked very well, and we have such a wonderful, loyal audience. And as we have made some schedule changes around Hazel, we found that our Hazel audience has increased as well. So she's come up with the rest of the lineup. And, you know, it's just it's such a classic, and it's a great value. And the fact that it's more of a hidden gem, like you said, it's not really available in quite as many places, that I think gives it its place on our schedule.
A number of these rerun-focused or repeat-focused channels have been doing more and more in the area of Westerns. I remember back in the 80s, the Family Channel was like the one place we could find Westerns from the classic days of the 50s and 60s on Saturday afternoons. But now you have MeTV doing it on Saturdays. You have others. At one point, AMC was doing The Rifleman in like a two-hour, three-hour block on Saturday mornings. How do you handle Westerns, and which ones do you have?
So we have expanded them on our lineup as well. And we have currently The Wagon Train, Rawhide, and The Lone Ranger. And again, you know, referencing Hazel, The Lone Ranger is probably one of those kinds of shows that, you know, maybe not as obvious, but it has been with us a long time, and it does very well. Rawhide and Wagon Train, you know, they're some of the original Westerns. There's such good Westerns from that era of TV. You know, obviously, there was a huge explosion in the late 50s and early 60s. Most notably Gunsmoke. But, you know, we've seen the success of Westerns with networks like INSP. And viewers are really loving that. And even, you know, Hollywood, what's old is new. Hollywood has been, you know, with Yellowstone and Taylor Sheridan remaking, or not remaking, but, you know, making more and more Westerns, and they're kind of turning back to the genre now.
We just had, by the way, the executive producer of Wild West Chronicles, which is sort of INSP's sort of answer to Death Valley Days, which was one of the all-time great syndicated series and probably the longest-running Western anthology in that type. And it seems that, again, the Western idea, and we're going to talk to Henry about this, Henry Park, on Friday, is, you know, how do you see it going in terms of where we go from here? I mean, I think it's amazing that in this era of plentiful television with so many channels that we don't have that explosion of Westerns as we did in the 50s and the 60s. You have like a Wild West Chronicles INSP, you have Yellowstone on Paramount Plus, you have Dark Winds, which is a Western mystery on AMC, which has done very well, particularly because of the Native American focus. But you wonder whether whether more people will go. What do you think in terms of the future of the TV Western?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. I've read some headlines that Harrison Ford's going to be a part of a new one, and that's certainly attention-grabbing. You know, that's something that I'd be interested in watching, you know, from a personal level. But I think you're right. You know, I don't quite have an explanation as to why in this era of explosion of scripted programming, why there's not, you know, a proportionate level of Westerns being produced. But like I said, with Yellowstone and some others, with the ones that are being made, they're seeing fantastic success.
Mm-hmm. How are you doing with national advertising? And are any of the advertisers stepping up to do more than just commercials? Let's say do featurettes or vignettes or try to do tie-ins with a particular series?
Yeah, we're always working to get national advertisers to partner with us on things like that. And some of our more notable advertisers have been SC Johnson and Bayer, Walgreens, et cetera. So in the way we're partnering to offer some, you know, value add, we actually just recently did some trivia with Bayer in our John Wayne movie matinee. I think we executed that, you know, for four or five movies, and the John Wayne movie matinee was something that we did from January through June, Sunday afternoons, to some terrific success. That was really our first dabble in movies on FETV. And it really set the stage for the Perry Mason movies that we have on now. So we've had great success with that.
Yeah. And the females are going to talk about a second channel that the folks behind this one run called Family Movie Channel, where they're at and where they're going in months ahead. We're speaking with Adam Summerall. He's the Executive Vice President of Family Entertainment TV, available on cable and satellite across the U.S. of A. He joins us live from South Bend, Indiana this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. It's our first half hour of big 120-minute Wednesday afternoon episode all for you. Simon Abbott with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment, many minutes with Adam, make the call, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, once again, among our guests, we'll have the executive producer and showrunner of Partner Track, the brand-new Netflix legal drama produced here in New York, Georgia Lee. That series premieres a week from Friday. And Georgia's also working on a writer's collective project, which is out to encourage more Netflix productions among people of color. We'll talk to her about both projects. Plus, there's a new network that just launched on smart TV sets and devices called Momentu. That's M-O-M-E-T-U. It's a network that's out to present films and television series from all over the world. You'll hear the two executives behind the service, Brian Luzil and Charles Angelis. That's all coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Adam, what's ahead for FETV in terms of putting new programs on?
Well, we have some big news for our programming. We have Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, coming to our network at the end of September. This is a show that we're very, very excited about. We think it fits so well into our lineup. And so we'll have a launch marathon September 24th and 25th, and then it will be on our regular schedule after that. And in October, we're going to be bringing the Gunsmoke movies to both FETV and FMC. And just like the Perry Mason movies that we've had success with this summer, we think the Gunsmoke movies will do very well.
Right. Those are the ones that James Arness made after Gunsmoke wrapped up its 20-year run on CBS.
Right. Yeah, in the late 80s, early 90s.
Is there a series that you are looking to get that, let's say, is under the radar screen? For example, speaking of James Arness, he also did a series for ABC for 2 years called How the West Was Won, based on the famous MGM movie. Many of the episodes are either 2 hour or 1 hour in length, and they haven't been seen, I believe, in terms of being on the network since they were on, I think, late 70s, early 80s on ABC.
You know, I couldn't really reveal what we're going at in the future, but I will say that a gem for us has been the addition of Emergency to our lineup. You know, obviously, when we're going to target a program and put it on FETV, it's clearly our hope that it's going to do well for us. But it has really exceeded our expectations, where we've put it on our schedule from 10 p.m. to midnight. And I think it's really struck a chord with the right kind of viewer that was, you know, fairly young when the show first came out. And it had a big impression on them. You know, the show is celebrating its 50-year anniversary this year. And they're really, really enjoying the reruns that they see now because it brings back all those positive memories. And we've seen so many comments on our social media pages from people who have said, you know, I watched Emergency as a kid and it inspired me to get into, you know, paramedic program or to become a nurse or something in the medical field. And it's really terrific to see a show have that kind of impact.
Mm-hmm. Well, given you have Emergency, any thoughts about getting other things from the Jack Webb catalog, programs like Adam 12, either the original Dragnet from the 50s or the color version from the late 1960s, or Project UFO, which ran 2 seasons on NBC, or General Electric True, the anthology show he did for Warner Brothers and CBS in the early 60s. There's a lot of Jack Webb programming that has not been carried on television since their initial network run.
Yeah. That is something we hear from our viewers a lot who are particularly enjoying Emergency is say, hey, you know, how about Adam 12 or how about Dragnet? And I think perhaps out of those choices that Adam 12 would be the leading candidate. But, hey, you know, Project UFO, I suppose you never know, right?
Some of these channels are now experimenting or have in the last couple of years experimented with original shows or vignettes. For example, MeTV does a show called Svengoolie, where they've blown original segments in with a sort of horror character that introduces a, as Mystery Science Theater 3000 would say, a cheesy movie. But they also have done a show with Lisa Wachtel from Facts of Life called Collector's Club, where you have the TV tie-in with Lisa, but it's a very interesting thing dealing with antique collections. I think they're going to their fourth season of production. There's an original children's show, which is sort of like the old, sort of a throwback to the great local kids shows of the 1950s and 60s. Is it Never Say Never in terms of original first-run programming for FBE TV, or maybe just maybe down the road, you might try something?
You know, you kind of took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say, you know, maybe not, but never say never. We feel like we have a lot more to explore in the library that is available to us than what we look to acquire. But, you know, if the right opportunity comes along and we see something that fits, then perhaps we'll take a look at that.
Before you go, Alan, let's talk about your sister network, Family Movie Channel, FMC. How is that doing, and how is that different from Turner Classic Movies and other, or AMC or other such networks?
The network is doing very, very well, FMC. We launched it in October of last year, so you could say in the linear TV world, you know, we basically launched it yesterday. But we feel very good about this network because it's uniquely situated in the media landscape as an ad-supported, you know, basic cable classic film network. TCM, obviously it's ad-free, and that means for most cable subscribers or many, you know, it perhaps could be in a more premium tier. So, you know, obviously the experience of having ad interruption during a movie, you know, some people take it or leave it, but that allows us to be more widely distributed. And just like FETV, we are working very hard to get FMC distributed to more systems and more viewers. But we're so excited about the programming on FMC. In September, we have some truly great films coming to the network, like On Golden Pond, Stagecoach, you know, the classic from John Ford, Foreign Correspondent from Alfred Hitchcock, Divorce American Style, starring Dick Van Dyke and Debbie Reynolds, and, you know, about a dozen other films that are premiering on FMC that month. So we just couldn't be more excited about that network.
And both FMC, Family Movie Channel, and Family Entertainment Television available coast-to-coast on cable and satellite. So check your local listings for where both services are available in your area in those fashions. And for more details about both services, especially Family Entertainment Television, we've discussed most of this half hour, here's where you go online, FETV.TV. That's FETV.TV. Again, Family Entertainment Television, Family Movie Channel, one or the other is probably in your area through cable and or satellite. Adam Summerall, the Executive Vice President of The Venture, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on how both networks are doing. And let's have you back soon as more new stuff, maybe original stuff, comes on your services.
Sounds good. Thank you, Simon.
You're welcome, Adam. Take care. Enjoy the rest of the week. Adam Summerall from Family Entertainment TV joining us live from South Bend, Indiana. When we come back, we will have our classic trivia question of the week. We'll have a show to know that may very well be one of this fall's big blockbuster series. It's Wednesday. Yes, there's an Adam Sandler character in there from Netflix and a very interesting person behind it, too. And then we'll go live to England where we will speak with the award-winning producer, director, writer of the new Peacock series, The Undeclared War. It's all about the world of cyberterrorism, Peter Kosminski. We'll have him, the first of our special three back-to-back internet radio exclusive interviews with some very exciting people, after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out Talking Sports Straight on BTR. It's taking place tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. That's Talking Sports Straight right here exclusively, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, that's BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to more of Tomorrow Be Televised, second half of our first of 2 hours here this Wednesday afternoon for the program all about TV's current and future. Simon Albaum with you live from New Haven, New York, 76 degrees at the bottom of the hour. We've got some wonderful guests coming your way over the next 90 minutes, so make your way to a phone and give us a call with a question or comment for our guests. The number you use is 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Coming up, we will have the first of our three back-to-back interradio exclusives, Peter Kosminski, the executive producer, writer, and director of the new Peacock miniseries that premieres tomorrow, The Undeclared War. He will join us live from the England countryside. Plus, we've got a show to know to tell you about before that. It's a show that we think may be one of the big fall blockbusters this year. And first, let's get to our classic trivia question of the week. This is the next to last time we're going to pose the question on our show. And if you're first with the correct answer, you can win the Nickelodeon Loud House Christmas card set, plus two nice best-selling books, Flirting with Fame by the entertainment PR whiz Dan Harari, who was on this program several weeks ago, and the novel that may become a television series, The Unexpected Danny Green by Paul Friedman, who was also on this show in recent months. Here's the question. Chevy Chase was the first Weekend Update anchor person on Saturday Night Live back in 1975. Who was second? And I got a hint, two hints for you. Number one, it was a woman in 1976. And two, yes, it was one of the Not Ready original primetime players. Once again, here's the question. Chevy Chase was Weekend Update's first anchor person on Saturday Night Live in 1975. Then who was second a year later? Two clues. A woman. Two, one of the, like Chevy Chase, original Not Ready for primetime players. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and your mailing address. So if you're first with the correct answer, you win. And we'll get those prizes to you as soon as possible. And if we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. That's UBC Simon, TWBT. One more time, here is that question. Chevy Chase was the original Weekend Update anchor person on Saturday Night Live back in 1975 on NBC. Who was second? Two clues. It was a woman, and it was, like Chevy Chase, one of the original Not Ready for primetime players. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. If you've won this contest previously, you are not eligible. Don't get a winner by the end of today. We'll post the question tomorrow on Facebook and on Twitter. So if you are to win, get in the game today, and all the very best. And now it's time for our regular feature we call A Show to Know, where we highlight a program that we think is worth your while to watch. And you might not know about it because it may not be well marketed, promoted, publicized, or it falls under the radar screen of TV critics and journalists. Well, in the case of today's Show to Know, I have no doubt that this show is not going to fall under the radar screen of critics and journalists, and it's going to be very well publicized and promoted by Netflix. Our show is Wednesday, the trailer of which came out this morning, and I had a chance to see it. And if you are an Addams Family fan, or maybe even not, whether it be the original TV series by ABC in the 60s or the movies since, well, I have a hunch this series is going to get you a lot of attention. The program stars Jenna Ortega, who I think could be one of the breakout stars of this fall and maybe this year, playing the iconic Wednesday Addams. And what happens to Wednesday? Well, she's growing up as a teenager, and she's having trouble making it in school. So her parents, Gomez and Morticia, take her to Nevermore Academy, where she studies all sorts of things, and at the same time, she tries to solve some murder mysteries in the area. By the way, the show is executive produced and directed by none other than one of the masters of oddball, unique cinema, Tim Burton himself. And he's joined, by the way, in this effort by Alfred Goh and Miles Millar, the brains behind the long-running CW series Smallville, who was on this program, by the way, a number of years ago. One of my favorite scenes from the trailer takes place in a pool in a high school where a water polo club is in practice. As it turns out, members of that club decide to bully Wednesday's brother, Pugsley, who incidentally is played by Isaac Ordonez. So Wednesday decides to exact some revenge in her own special way on the members of that water polo club. You have to see this scene for yourself. It is absolutely breathtaking, funny, and yes, crazy, and a bit on the bloody side. Maybe more than a bit on the bloody side. It is something special. And I have to tell you, the production values look incredible. It looks like Tim Burton is on his TV game. The people who do this show have called this an 8-hour Tim Burton movie. I have no doubt that this show is going to be incredible, and it's going to be incredibly covered. Again, the name of the program is Wednesday. It will premiere this fall on Netflix. We don't have the exact date for you. You can see the trailer on YouTube. And boy, oh boy, I think this could be one of the big blockbusters. I'm going on a limb here. Maybe not. This may very well be one of the big blockbusters here. And I'll say this. I think Jenna Ortega could very well be one of the breakout stars, not only this fall, but this entire 2022. As soon as we find out when it will be running this fall, we'll let you know. And, yes, we will be on the horn to try to get Tim Burton or Alfred Gower and Miles Millar, some of the other people involved in making the show, to come on this program. Incidentally, one of the other executive producers is Kevin Misoroki. He works with the Charles Addams Foundation. Charles Addams, of course, was the creator of the Addams Family, one of the great cartoons of all time. He did those cartoons while he was with the New Yorker magazine. And so it's great to see that the foundation that keeps his wonderful work alive is involved in the making of this series. And by the way, the Addams parents, that's Morticia and Gomez, are played by none other than Academy Award winner Catherine Zeta-Jones as Morticia and Louis Guzman as Gomez. So should be a lot of fun. And yes, they do have major roles to play. Although, as the producers are saying, this is not a direct replica of the Addams Family. It is basically focused on that daughter, Wednesday. So again, Wednesday will premiere this fall on Netflix. More details, go to Netflix.com. That's Netflix.com. And you can see the trailer right now on YouTube. Now, is there a TV series that's coming up that or that's currently on that you think people should know about and watch? Well, we want to give it that showcase right here on this program, and we have to hear from you to do it. So all you got to do is use that email, SimonApple04 at Yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04 at Yahoo.com. Please give us the information about the show, if it's currently on, where it's on, if it's going to be on soon, tell us where and when, and if we use your suggestion on the air, you, yes, you, get the credit. So make that email happen, SimonApple04 at Yahoo.com, and who knows, you could be giving us the subject of our next Show to Know, which we present regularly here, for those of you that are joining us for the first time, regularly here on this program. Well, this is Tomorrow Be Televised. We are the program all about TV's current and future. And we are awaiting our next guest, Peter Kosminski, the award-winning executive producer, writer, and director of a new series on Peacock, miniseries that will be launching tomorrow called The Undeclared War. It is all about the world of cyber terrorism. And here's what he has to say in the press release that came out about this program a couple of months ago. And I quote, "The Undeclared War has been many years in the making. It imagines how the next few years might play out in the domain of cyber warfare, a battle unseen by the public, but with potentially devastating consequences. In my work, I've tried to shine a light on aspects of publicity policy, which affect us all, but where the details of what is taking place, often behind the scenes, are not well understood. I hope the drama will give audiences an insight into a world certain to impact our lives significantly in the years ahead." Incidentally, the program is set in 2024. It takes place involving a leading team of analysts who are involved with an organization called GCHQ. They are trying to make sure that a set of cyber attacks that are happening in England or the United Kingdom that are supposedly taking place before a general election stop. And incidentally, one of the people in the series, which has already been reviewed very positively by critics on the other side of the Atlantic, are all talking about a 21-year-old person by the name of Hannah Kalik Brown. She plays an intern at this organization called Sarah Parvon, and she seems to be sort of in the center of this unique miniseries drama. Again, the drama is called The Undeclared War. It will premiere tomorrow on Peacock, which is available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, and in some markets also available through your local cable system through cable operators like Comcast, which is the parent of NBC Universal and Peacock, as well as other cable operators around the country. All right? All righty. So if you have a question or comment for our next guest, make that phone call now, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio, or use that chat room that we have for you. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And if you just joined us, you're in luck because in our next hour, we have two outstanding guests for you. At the top of the hour, we'll be joined in Los Angeles by Desta Tedros-Repp. She is the executive producer of A League of Our Own. That's the new version of the iconic 1980s movie about a women's baseball team during World War II. It's the second time that the film has been adapted for television, and this time it's getting rave reviews on Amazon Prime Video. And maybe a second season. We'll find out from Tessa about that. And also, in our second half of the next hour, we'll be joined by one of the highest directors in television, episodically, Julianne Robinson. She worked on Bridgerton. She got an Emmy nomination for doing the first episode. She works a lot with Chandra Rhimes on shows like Grey's Anatomy. And she's currently doing three series, one of which, Partner Track from Netflix, produced here in New York, that'll be coming out next Friday. Well, now joining us live from the English countryside is the executive producer, writer, and director of The Undeclared War, Peter Kaczynski. Peter, welcome in.
Hi, how are you?
Very, very fine, thank you. How long had you thought about doing a miniseries about the world of cyber terrorism?
It's just over 5 years since we started on this, Simon. It was an idea that I dreamed up with my colleague, Colin Callender, who's based in New York. And we were interested in trying to draw to the general public's attention this hot war that's going on almost in secret in this new domain of conflict called the cyber domain. And it's a full-on war going on there, which very few people seem to know much about. So we thought this was worthy of some airtime.
And in fashioning the scenario for this cyber war, did you look at various ways that people would attack and counterattack using their computers?
Absolutely. You know, we did about 3 years of research on this show, both in Britain and in the U.S., and talked to a very large number of people, some of whom, you know, were sort of actively involved in this right at that time, and some of whom have been involved in the recent past. So this is very, although the story is fictional, although the characters are fictional, the things that you see happen, the things that the characters do and the things that happen to the characters are absolutely realistic and based on very, very thorough research. So this is, in answer to your question, we looked at all different kinds of ways in which an individual's computer and an entire country's computer system can be attacked, and also ways in which countries and individuals can attack other people and other institutions. So we went into it in some depth.
Some of the critics that have commented on this series believe that one of the things you've done that is really terrific is that it's not, you know, a situation where you go back and forth between people sitting at their computers and attacking each other, playing offense, playing defense. And some people, I think, in advance might have thought, well, you know, if you're showcasing a war where people are not fighting with guns or knives or bayonets or whatever, that it might get a little, you know, back and forth ping pong boring. How did you and your fellow writers and producers try to veer away from that possibility and make it not just as realistic as possible, but also as engaging as possible for viewers?
Yeah, well, first of all, you're absolutely right, of course. If this drama had just been, you know, a lot of people sitting, pounding keyboards, staring at incomprehensible lines of computer code on the screen, you know, it would have been about as interesting as watching paint dry on a wall. So we had to find ways to try to show people what was happening within the computer world, within the computer, but also within the heads of these incredibly gifted computer coders, how their minds were working as they were conducting these battles within the computer. So, you know, some of your audience may remember a movie called Tron, and then, there was a follow-up to it some years later, where the way they did this was actually to physically create what looked like the world within the computer, you know, a sort of high-tech world, a graphical world. We didn't do that. We tried to find real-world situations where our central characters were doing things that corresponded with what they were doing on the computer, but had a kind of real-world example. So I'll just rough very quickly one out for you just to help your audience understand what the hell I'm talking about. one of the things that computer hackers do typically when they're trying to break into a computer is they attack a series of what you might call doorways. You know, in the computer world, they're called ports. And most of these are locked, but they have various techniques whereby they try to break through those locked doors. Well, then it's fairly obvious that to try to convey that to an audience and to convey the thought processes going on, we needed to create a situation where there were a series of locked doors. Where instead of doing just the sort of standard, long corridor with locked doors, we set it on a beach near the sea in somewhere in Wales. And we had a series of these, I don't even know whether you have them in the States, a series of what we call little beach chalets or little huts whereby you go in there to get changed when you know, out of your street clothes when you want to go swimming in the sea. And they're sort of tended in Britain to be brightly colored. So we had a series of those all padlocked, and our central character had to find a way to break into one of them.
Mm-hmm. You're hearing Peter Kosminski. He is joining us live from the countryside of Great Britain. He's the executive producer, director, writer of Peacock's new cyber terrorism miniseries, The Undeclared War. It begins tomorrow here in the U.S. of A. on Peacock. Available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Also in some areas available to your local cable operator, including Comcast, the parent company of both Peacock and NBC Universal. And Peter's with us this half hour right here on Tomorrow Be Televised on our big two-hour special edition this Wednesday afternoon. Simon Appel, I'm with you live from New York, 76 degrees near the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for Peter, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonAppel04 by name. Coming up on Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, the fourth of our episodes this week, we will have Mei Chan, the co-developer, executive producer, and writer, showrunner of the new Apple TV Plus program, Surfside Girls, based on the popular comic book series. Plus, we'll talk about multi-channel bundle Plex, and its new deal to bring a new channel to life based on the popular website The Hill. We'll have Jason Jedlinski, the general manager of The Hill, joining us live, along with Plex Vice President Sean Eldridge. Plus, we'll find out about the current and future state of the television Western. Way back in the 1950s and early 60s, Westerns were everywhere on television, all shapes and sizes. Today, a few bits here and there like Yellowstone, Dark Waters, Dark Winds on AMC, Wild West Chronicles on ISSP. What is, in this era of plentiful television, the current and future state of the TV Western series? We'll ask Henry Park. He's the entertainment editor of the popular website and magazine True West. All Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, this is a big night in addition for you right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Peter, given that cyber terrorism is a high-tech form of espionage, were any like classic espionage movies inspiration for you? For example, Turner Classic Movies here in the United States recently ran last week The Manchurian Candidate, the brilliant 1960s movie with Lawrence Harvey and Frank Sinatra by John Frankenheimer. I still think it's one of the most brilliant movies I've ever seen, and certainly that deals with high-tech espionage in a huge way.
Well, not really is the honest answer. The show that I was most influenced by is a TV show here in the UK, which is called Edge of Darkness. Now, this show got remade as a movie in the US, and it was a pretty good movie, I think. But it originated as a multi-part TV series back in the day. And although it wasn't about cyber, it was actually about nuclear terrorism, there was something about the mood of it. There was something about the central character. There was something about the way it was constructed and something about the fact that it had a sort of heightened reality about it. It had another world associated with it, really, that influenced me tremendously. And it remains, as far as I'm concerned, the best TV show I've ever seen. So if you guys have not yet managed to see it over there in New York, you should try and dig it out. It's a superb show and still available as far as I know.
I've heard about that. What also comes to mind for what you said, Peter, is The Prisoner, which is now starting to show up on YouTube. And I saw when it first came out back in the mid-1960s. Patrick McGoohan made another one of the great television shows of all time. It was as bizarre and very high-tech, too, as anything. And it still packs a punch so many decades later.
Well, I hadn't realized you were old enough to remember The Prisoner. I certainly remember it, and it was, you're absolutely right. It had the same sort of way of storytelling. It was a far superior piece of work, obviously, but as we were trying to achieve on the Undeclared War as well, a sort of heightened reality, a sort of otherworldliness, a kind of semi-fantasy quality. It's a really good example to give. Thank you.
You're very, very welcome. You mentioned Colin Collender, who you've worked with on this series, very classy producer and former HBO executive, also with other TV services here in the United States. But in front of the camera, you've got an Oscar nominee in Mark Rylance, and you also have somebody who looks like is going to be a breakout star. She's been mentioned in some of the reviews of the show. Her name is Hannah Collius Brown. She plays this intern, 21 years old, named Sarah Parvin, and she ends up being one of the central figures in your work.
Yeah, I've had the privilege to work with a number of young actors starting out on their career, and there's no question in my mind that Hannah Collius Brown is one of those actors who is going to go on to have an extraordinary career. And you're right, there does seem to be a huge buzz around her. But, you know, when you're casting for a role like this, and she's the dominant character across 6 hours of television, the thing you're looking for is someone who can carry the show. Now, of course, what does a lead actor have that other actors, you know, I'm sorry about this, other actors, but what do they have? Charisma. You know, you have to want to watch that person on the screen. And this is pretty much the hardest aspect of what people like me do, looking at really great actors in audition and trying to work out, do they have that extra ingredient, that charisma that will mean that they can carry a show, that people are going to want to tune back in and watch them or binge that show because they care about that the character being depicted by that actor, and they want to see what happens to them. And I think Hannah Collius Brown, who plays our lead character, Sarah Parvin, is exactly that kind of actor. So watch out for her. She's got a great career ahead of her.
And talk about two other people. I mentioned Mark Rylance, who won an Oscar nomination several years ago, but also Simon Pegg, who is a pretty charismatic person too.
Well, Simon Pegg is an actor, you know, most of us have encountered. He did some sort of wonderful low-budget movies in Britain when he was starting out, but of course he's better known for the Mission Impossible franchise, the Star Trek franchise. You know, he's done both low-budget movies and these huge marquee movies. But they all have a slightly comedic element to them. There's no question, and Simon is a comedic writer as well as being a stunning performer of comedy. But I knew that Simon was interested in doing some non-comedic work, and I had written a part in the part of Danny Patrick, who is the head of operations at GCHQ, which is the UK's version of the NSA. You know, it's the sort of British government's sort of spy station, signal spy. They call it SIGINT, you know, signal spy station. The listening base, really. And I had written a part of Danny Patrick, who's the head of operations there. And I just thought, with my colleague Colin Callender, we thought that that Simon Pegg would be just right for that role. So we approached him, and you know, I was thrilled that. That he wanted to play the role. So it turned out that he had grown up very close to where this listening station, GCHQ, is in Britain. In fact, his brother, I think, had worked on the electrics when the building was created. So he had a sort of family connection and a fascination with this secret world, which he'd seen from the outside but never been able to penetrate as a kid. And so perhaps that acted as an extra incentive for him to agree to take part.
Peter, how important was it for you to be both writer, director, and executive producer of this miniseries, given what entails with all three roles?
That's a good question. I tend to, you know, some directors are what you could call a kind of gun for hire. You know, people bring them scripts because they're great stylists, and they say, you know, here you are, direct this. I'm not like that. First of all, I'm not, you know, I'm not in their league as a director. But also, I like to come up with the idea myself. You know, I spend a lot of time, and I have help, and some researchers and colleagues who help me with this. And we, you know, we dig around. You know, this kind of TV, these what we call in Britain dramas, they take a very, very long time to make. This one took 5 years. So trying to work out what is going to be relevant and timely and of interest 5 years down the road is not easy. You know, I've been doing this 42 years, and one of the things you try to learn, although you often get it wrong, is what is going to still be of interest to people in 5 years' time? What's going to be current? And it's difficult to predict, as we all know. I mean, who would have predicted Donald Trump, you know? I like to come up with the idea. I try and choose things that I think will have an impact by the time they're broadcast. And that means really then seeing them through, researching them, writing them, and eventually directing them. It sort of goes with the territory, really.
Final thought before you go, Peter. What takeaway do you hope we here in the United States should have from your miniseries when it comes to dealing with cyberterrorism, if goodness knows we have to face that, whether it comes from Russia or China or Iran or some other power?
Okay, that's a really good question. The takeaway is you need to care about this stuff. Listen, there's a lot of different things competing for our concern in the world at the moment. You know, we know most of the Western world is very polarized politically. We've got huge economic crisis, inflation rising. And on top of all that, we have the climate crisis. But I'm afraid we're going to need to worry about this too. Sorry, guys. Because quietly, in the background, something very dangerous is going on. These weapons, these cyber weapons, which cut at the things that underpin our civilized society now, like the internet, like our transport systems, like our electricity, like our gas, our communications, they're all now built on these platforms that are very vulnerable to cyber attack. The problem with cyber is if Russia attacks the U.S., takes down part of its electricity network or something, you know, the U.S. is not going to get pushed around. The U.S. is going to want to respond. And then the Russians, you know, being the Russians, probably going to want to hit back again. And that's what we call escalatory. Cyber is naturally escalatory, you know. I hit you, you hit me back, then I hit you again even harder. And it very, very quickly escalates to become really quite dangerous. And yet this is all going on. You know, there's some brave people dealing with this at NSA, GCHQ, and elsewhere in the world. But that we need to know what's being done in our name, you know, and we need to know what these guys are trying to do to defend us. This is serious, and I'm afraid that would be the takeaway for me, that we need to keep an eye on this because it's quite a dangerous situation we're sort of sleepwalking into, really.
The Undeclared War is Peacock's new scripted miniseries about a subject called cyberterrorism that maybe all of us should take in this contemporary age a lot more seriously. Front of mind. It will premiere tomorrow on Peacock, available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, also available through your local cable operator such as Comcast, the parent company of Peacock, and NBC Universal. For more details about the program online, go to www.peacocktv.com. That's www.peacocktv.com. The Undeclared War begins Thursday, tomorrow, on Peacock. Peter Kosminski, the executive producer, writer, and director of this very important scripted miniseries, thank you very much for joining us. Where it's prime time where you are in the English countryside. Congratulations on making this program, you and everybody involved. And hopefully that takeaway is going to be loud, clear, and lasting for all of us in the United States after seeing your work.
Thank you, Simon. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome, Peter. Take care. Enjoy the rest of your week. Peter Kosminski joining us live from the countryside of England, where it is now prime time in that country. When we come back, we have a second power hour in store for you. First up, from the new Prime Video series, getting a lot of rave reviews, A League of Their Own, we will have executive producer Desta Tedros-Ref. She'll join us live from L.A. after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tuning.com, together reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you want to be in the know in a very unusual musical format, be in the know tomorrow on BTR at 10:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 Pacific. It's In the Know with Onewa. That's In the Know tomorrow, 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, best of BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second hour of Tomorrow Be Televised on this two-hour special for your Wednesday afternoon. And welcome to those who are just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Ambon with you live from New York, 78 degrees at the top of this hour. And boy, we have a fantastic power hour for you. Two marvelous guests in the 60 minutes ahead. And we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone and dial in with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio. Or use our chat room to get your inquiries in. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. One of the most iconic movies of the 1980s was A League of Their Own. It's the film with Gina Davis, Madonna, Rosie O'Donnell in the cast, directed by the late, great Penny Marshall, and written by Lowell Mance and Bobo Mandel, who worked on Happy Days and other Paramount television series throughout the 1970s. The story was a true one about women's baseball taking place during World War II, while the men were in the battlegrounds. Back in 1993, CBS tried a TV series version of A League of Their Own for the first time. Five episodes were made. It was canceled after three episodes. Two were run later. Well, A League of Their Own, second effort, is back, and it's Grand Slam home run, according to the critics. It is now playing on Prime Video, of course, run by Amazon. Joining us live from Los Angeles, one of the series' executive producers, we welcome in Desta Tedros-Ref. Desta, congratulations and welcome to our program. And hang on for one moment. Get you in a bit. Bear with us, folks. And let's see if we can get her in. I think we can right now.
Oh.
There we go.
Hi.
Desta, welcome in.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Welcome into the program.
Oh, thank you, and thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
It is a pleasure. First of all, congratulations to you, your crew, everybody involved. How is everybody feeling one week in about the success of this version of this movie?
I mean, I think really great. I think a little overwhelmed. I think this is a series that is such a labor of love and has been labored for a very long time. We, like, finished shooting, I think, like, almost 9 months ago. So to just actually have it into the world, it's very exciting and also, just to be honest, a little surreal. And we're just happy to see the people who are finding it, the people who are seeing themselves in it, and the people who are connecting to it.
Why do you think it took so long for this iconic TV movie to be adapted as a television series, especially after CBS, I mentioned, had tried it in the early 1990s and pulled the plug after three episodes?
I mean, I think honestly any television show, if you really get down to it, takes a long time. That is just the process in a lot of different ways. But I think ours specifically, I mean, I think when you're dealing with a beloved IP and finding the right way to sort of transition it into television takes care and thought. Like even like we say about the show, it's not really a reboot. It's a reimagining. It's kind of like the cousin of the movie, but it definitely has the spirit with its very own clear identity, which I think is important. But I think for this specific project, that was something we were really committed to. It really was a collaboration. You know, we're trying to represent a generation of women and of like the times in the 40s, but also to be reflective of a generation now. And that required a lot of conversations, a lot of listening, a lot of just processing. And I think that was a part of a sort of what made the road longer. It definitely, it made the show what it is today. Which is something we are all, Will, Abby, I, everyone who's a part of it, are so incredibly proud of. But that's not, I think oftentimes doing something right is not a fast process. You know, it's like what they say in the movie, it's like the heart is what makes it great. And I think that is a part of it.
What is the trick to reimagine a movie like this? A movie that really brought, when it came out, was successful because it was not just because of the cast. It had like Madonna in her first major role and Rosie O'Donnell in a breakout role. And of course, Gina Davis, who by the way, will be getting an Emmy Award, the Governor's Award next month. A film that takes people back to a period of time in sports that a lot of people, until that movie came out, really did not know a lot about. I mean, people knew about the Negro League,
right,
for example, but they did not know that during World War II, while many male people were off the battlefield, that you had these women's teams barnstorming around the country.
Yeah, I mean, I would even, like, challenge that as far as the Negro League. I think there's so much about history that we, like, don't know. Because it takes more, I mean, I think that's with all the stories that we're going into, like, it takes more investigation to see sort of like what's behind, like, the sort of the story behind the stories. And I think for sort of our particular show and sort of kind of trying to imagine sort of like a reimagining of this, like, how do you adapt it and what was important? Like, we are all, like, the reason why we made this is because we love the movie. I mean, I loved the movie as a kid. Will, Abby, everybody involved. That movie speaks to so many people in so many different ways. And I think it's because it's about sort of like being on the field when the world hasn't really given you a shot or doesn't want you to. It's sort of like chasing your dream despite sort of the barriers and celebrating that. And I think that is the spirit of the film that resonates. And for us in an adaptation, I'm like, that's what we have to capture. You can change the pieces we want to and need to. I mean, it's like the All-American Girls League was a real league. So all our stories are based, like the movie, it's based on history. But sort of how do we transform this into a television medium? The thing that we're like, the thing we have to get right is that spirit, is that feeling. We can tell them in a lot of different ways with a lot of different characters and a lot of different storylines, but like really capturing the spirit of the film, because that's what we loved about it, was what we were really focusing on for the show.
How soon into the creative process did you and Will Graham and Abby Jacobson, the co-creators and like you executive producers of the series, find that spirit, find that sort of centerpiece between recreating the period and making it and bringing some contemporary glasses, if you will, or contemporary views to the table?
Well, I think kind of immediately, because like there has to be a reason to do it, right? There has to be a reason to take this beloved movie and sort of transform it in our, again, it's a cousin, but it's still a league of their own and still evokes like all the spirits and sort of like a lot of the touch points of the movie. There has to be a reason to do it now. Like, what is the reason? What is the why now? And I think Will was the first one who sort of jumped on the train of this and like really like sort of like marshaled this into fruition, was sort of looking, he's sort of like a history buff and sort of loving the movie and being like, let me look and like just curiously researching some of the stories. And he was sort of just sort of like taken by the depth of all that, like how wonderful the movie is, all the stories that remained untold. And that's not a criticism to the movie. It's a two-hour movie that came out in 1992. But there were so many more stories about these women, so many queer stories, so many stories about black players and black women who weren't allowed on the field, where you see nods to it in the film, whether sort of textually or subtextually. But I think in realizing, and that is what is true about the show, it is based in research. It is based in authenticity. And I think part of the reason it feels timely is because some of these issues of women empowerment, of sort of like sexuality, of intersectionality are timeless, and realizing that we could say something about the now in looking to the lens of them.
Mm-hmm. Before we move on, how much of an effort was there to make sure that the plots dealt with issues of diversity, whether it was with African-American players or Latino women or Asian-American, Native, et cetera, et cetera, who might have been around at that time and could have been part of women's baseball?
I think for us, it was just important to tell the story, and these were sort of the stories. Like, for example, like there were teams, like the players on the Peaches, like the Lupe character and the Essie character, those are inspired by real players who, like, had to pass in their way in order to be on the team. And I think, listen, I'm a Black queer woman. Abby and Will are both queer. I think we have a sort of a court of, like, we live in a space that can sometimes be seen as other, and we wanted to see ourselves on screen. So it kind of is the lens that we view the world. So it was always sort of a fabric. And the sort of wonderful thing about it is it was also just true.
A League of Their Own, adapted and expanding the iconic 1990s movie directed by the late and great Penny Marshall and written originally from a short story by Lowell Ganz and Bob Lou Mandel, who are two people, by the way, in case you don't know. They worked on Happy Days and other Paramount television series on ABC, comedies mostly, during the 1970s. Well, A League of Their Own is now running successfully, I might add, on Prime Video. It's available on smart TV sets and smart devices, including Amazon Fire TV sets and devices as well. We are speaking with one of the executive producers of the series, Desta Tedros Reps. She joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Delighted you're with us on this Wednesday afternoon, wherever you may be. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York, 78 degrees at the moment. If you have a question or comment for our guest, don't be shy. Work that phone, 646-652-2906. We'll use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with one of the most in-demand episodic TV directors around on both sides of the Atlantic, here in the United States and in England. Her name is Julianne Robinson. She won an Emmy Award last year for the opening episode of a little thing called Bridgerton. She's now working on three television series, one of which, Partner Track, whose executive producer and showrunner, Georgia Lee, will be on this program next Monday. That series premieres on, which was produced here in New York, that series will premiere a week from Friday on Netflix. She's also working on a Hulu series and on a series for Peacock, and we'll find about both of those series when Julie joins us after the bottom of the hour. What was it like to put the series together in terms of casting, in terms of finding where you're going to film this, and in terms of coming up with the plot lines?
I mean, it's a massive undertaking. I've always said that I've worked on a period piece, I've worked on an ensemble show, and worked on an action show. I've never worked on all of them at the same time. But that's also, I think, part of what people love about the movie is you get to kind of have all the things. So I think that was really important to it. But it was really overwhelming, I think, for the casting of it all. There's a lot of characters, and it was really important to kind of find the right fit. And it required a lot of our actors, and Felicia Donahue, who is our casting director, did an amazing job. But it was like we were looking for people who could both push the comedy and push the drama, and finding someone who sort of hit that sweet spot was really difficult and honestly kind of kismet. But also allowing, which I think, again, this show is like a collaboration. It was really allowing people to bring themselves, the actor. I mean, between the actors, between the production design, between everything, allowing people to bring themselves to the roles and to the art, because that only enriched everything we were doing. But I mean, it was a huge undertaking. I mean, even just like we filmed in Pittsburgh, we built a full period baseball stadium that the Peaches play with, which was like, looks amazing, but was like so much work. I don't know if you know this, Pittsburgh rains a lot, which is really difficult when you're trying to shoot baseball. You know, I think with anything that's this big, there are a lot of obstacles. But I think sort of the mission of sort of visibility, inclusivity of the show just kept us going at every sort of difficult turn.
Mm-hmm. Did Abby want to be one of the players as well as be behind the scenes putting the show together?
Originally when Abby got involved with Will, she wasn't like signed on to star in it. I think it was sort of just she was interested and captivated by the movie. She was interested in sort of the stories that were like, was sort of like Will was looking to tell. So originally it was sort of just in sort of a creative kind of creator showrunner perspective, but as the characters built, and again, this is a collaborative show and we bring a lot of ourselves into the storylines, into the characters, and Abby specifically, I think that's what's really exceptional about the work she does. I've never worked with someone who's so famous and so vulnerable and willing to like make herself, I don't know if it's the joke, but a lot of her humor comes from her personal vulnerability, is that when we started sort of shaping the character of Carson and she got into it, it felt, listen, Carson is not Abby, but there's a lot of pieces of her that are like infused into the character. And I think she sort of, it more and more became clear that it was something that felt right for her to do. and she's fantastic in it.
How important was it to have a lot of the cast be new faces? And reading the press release about who is in this series, I don't know a lot of the names. I don't know a lot of the faces. So it seems that this is actually, the series is also being a showcase for a lot of new talent or people that may not have had the major break in, if they've been in TV series before, and it looks like this series may give them that break.
I mean, I hope so, because so many people in our cast are just so incredibly talented in so many different ways. They deserve all the attention, all the accolades, all the things. I don't think we went about casting like trying to find like specific like known talents or not known talents. It was really about finding like who was the best fit for the, who was interested in like who was the best fit for the role. But I do think on sort of like a global level, the exciting thing about a large IP, the exciting opportunity about a large IP like this is that you don't have to name cast in the same way, because just the title of A League of Their Own already brings people in. So not to say I think you cast like a lot of big names because they're really talented, but also because it's a way of grasping people's attention. And I think that really opened up the opportunity with this show, is that people already know A League of Their Own. They're already leaning in. They're already interested. So you don't have to prioritize that in the same way. Not that I think we ever did in the casting. It was really about finding like the right person. And a lot of these, it's interesting too. It's a collaboration. It's a team. And I think it's also in a lot of ways a family. A lot of these people, like Abby's really good friends with Kate, or like knowing like Roberta, like there are people in the cast that we've all sort of worked with or interacted with in different ways. And this was really, I mean, even Abby and Darcy have been friends for 15 years. It was really an opportunity to sort of like get to play on the field together, which was so cool.
Mm-hmm. How much training, by the way, did the cast have to go through to learn baseball?
They did a lot, actually. We have an amazing baseball team that sort of like oversees, we had a front team like which would be on set, and then we just had a baseball team that oversaw sort of like all the baseball you see, making sure it looked authentic, making sure the players were sort of up and could pass as like baseball players, and training them in their different ways and sort of specific positions. And led by Justine Siegel, who is the first woman to coach in the major leagues. And so they did a significant amount of training before we shot the pilot. And the pilot was actually shot before, like, lockdown and COVID hit. So there is, I think, between when the pilot was shot and when we actually shot the season, there was, like, maybe, I mean, it was probably over a year, maybe 18 months. So there was a significant gap. So that going into shooting the season, they did weeks of baseball training, which you're in Los Angeles, but it was like, it was hard, but it was great because it is important enough to honor the movie and to honor like women, the women who play baseball and softball and women athletes. They are, everybody are Peaches Max, whoever you see playing has to look legit. Like that is part of, this is just a celebration of like female athleticism and it has to look like that. So the training was super important, and the cast all really like dedicated themselves to it. And I also think it was good just for like a bonding perspective, because it really did make them, they were like having to operate like a team, and it really did make them feel like a team going into shooting.
A League of Their Own, expanding upon the iconic 1990s movie, is a new hit from Amazon Studios, Sony Pictures Television, and Field Trip Productions, which involves our guest, executive producer Dasta Telrose-Ref. And incidentally, the show is now running on Prime Video, which is available on smart TV sets and smart devices all over the U.S. of A. And that includes Amazon Fire TV smart sets and smart devices as well. Dasta joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Smart TV Televised. Tom Abbott with you live from New York. For a question or comment, many moments with her, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Friday on Smart TV Televised, we'll kick things off with the co-developer, executive producer, and writer showrunner of the new Apple TV Plus series, Good for All Ages, Surfside Girls, based on the IDW comic character, Mei Chan, will be with us. Then we'll have the situation involving multi-channel bundle Plex, which is now in the business of getting new channels off the ground. One of them, a channel based on the popular news source, The Hill, owned by Nexstar. General manager of The Hill, Jason Jelinski, will join us So will Plex Vice President of Strategic Alliances and Content, Sean Eldridge. And finally, what is the state, current and future, of the TV Western series in this era of plentiful, interactive, diverse television? We'll speak with the entertainment editor of True West, Henry Park, who is very big on trivia regarding classic TV Westerns and movies. It's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Desta, of all the plot lines and storylines of this season, what to you is the most special, and one in particular that it looks like the audience is really enjoying or being engaged with?
I think there's interesting. There's so many. I mean, I would think the two that speak out most to me in a lot of different ways, I think just Max's storyline, the relationships in Max's life, I think are so important and so nuanced in a way that you don't actually see in a lot of Black perspectives, because usually you only have like one Black character. But we get to, you know, Max doesn't have an on-the-field team. She's trying so hard to get one. But it's really the relationship, her sort of off-the-field team is what gets her where she's going. So I think there's such a specialness in that in her. I think people love and respond to, which we do, Max and Clan. I mean, I was on set for just about every take of the entire show. And, like, it's fun. You know something is good when you, like, wrote a joke. You're watching. You wrote it. It's been revised 15 million times. Like, you're watching the fifth take of it, and you're still laughing. That is what, like, their dynamic is. They're just sort of, like, television, comedic, story, character, whatever you want, gold. I think their relationship is so important. And I love it, and it seems like fans are responding to it. I don't think they don't get as much screen time, but, like, the relationship between Max and her father, I think, is really beautiful, because so often we don't portray sort of, like, positive perspectives of Black fatherhood. So just to have a dad who's just, like, there and super supportive and wonderful, who actually reminds me a lot of my own father, is really personal to me. And then just lastly, which is something that was, I think, pretty transformative, is the Birdie-Gracie relationship that we have. You know, if people are watching, we do a trans storyline. And I think what's pretty revolutionary about it is it's not, and that's a lot of our Black characters, it's, like, not sourced in trauma. But there's a moment that always sort of, like, sticks with me in my mind, where they're like, they're with Max and she's like, go off, you know, go get your, she like sends her off to like go get a girl. And then she turns, Gracie, sort of the wife, turns to Birdie and is like, and you come get your girl. And it's just this positive perspective of just normalized queer, sort of queer love that is really, really powerful. And I see, you know, it's not as many people who are like seeing themselves in Max and Clan, but the people who do feel that and see that, it's pretty transformational.
One of the most iconic things about the original movie was the catchphrase, "There's no crying in baseball," uttered by Tom Hanks, who played the manager in the film. Was there a lot of discussion about whether this series should have a catchphrase all its own, or somehow or other bring the catchphrase, "There's no crying in baseball," in?
I mean, there are certain things where you're like, we just have to do it, right? Like, I think that's the thing about the movie is we love it. We all love it. We all want to honor it, both in spirit and honor the people who love the movie and they're coming to the show. That's why we have a lot of, like, little, like, winks and nods and Easter eggs to the film, but just reimagined in a sort of our own way. So, I mean, I don't think it's like a huge spoiler. Like, Jess, who's one of the characters in the Peaches, like, yells it at Carson because she's, like, struggling in a moment. Or, I mean, it's in the trailer where you see, like, basically the Gina Davis barehanded catch actually happens to Max, and you see it, like, pop. So I think we were intentional in putting those in, and some of, like, the most powerful, and even in the beginning where you see Max do that amazing throw that goes into the stands, which is in the movie, I think we were really intentional about having our nods to the film, but transforming them in our own way. Really, it was just to sort of play, like, homage and to show how much we really love the film.
Yeah. Des, have you got any feedback from the actual women's players themselves back in the day? What did they have to say about this version of A League of Their Own? What do they have to say about to you?
Well, one of our, I mean, we worked with a consultant, Maybelle Blair, who was one of, who played in the league. And she's sort of been through it with her whole journey. And a lot of it is like, I mean, some of the motivation, she's a woman, she just, kind of, she's become funny, like the fastest ascent to a queer icon never there was. When we did our premiere in Tribeca a couple of months ago, she came out for the first time at 95. And she has been like, this is my story. This is the story of so many women who played in this league and couldn't be who they were publicly, but still found a way to live their lives and find joy in their sort of athleticism and their queerness and all this. So those sorts, like the response of Nadal and those sorts of responses have been fantastic. And also, I mean, we've gotten responses. We recently did like to sort of kind of get the West Rockford / Black Rockford right. We spoke to people who had lived in black residents who lived in Rockford at the time, kind of about their experience of it, because the show is really rooted so deeply in authenticity. And they reached out and were like, we loved it. Like, you did a really great job. And having those responses just kind of to mean the world.
So while you wait to hear from Sony and Amazon Studios if a second season is coming up, what are you and Field Trip involved with? What's next for your company in terms of television?
I think Field Trip has a ton of different projects with a lot of really interesting creators. Like, the bent is really for Will and his company Joy, and finding different ways and iterations to facilitate that. And honestly, a lot of us we're really focused on just fingers crossing and hoping there can be a season two. We're already sort of like having conversations about what we want to do and where we want these characters to grow and go. And I think just honestly, so much of our focus and attention is just really hoping, doing everything we can, leaving it all on the field to try to ensure that that can happen.
On the field for Field Trip. That's a great metaphor.
Yeah.
And on that note, what kind of conversations are popping up with you and everybody involved about where do you want to, in a second season, take the series?
I think it's just sort of building on what the foundation of the first season and going more in depth with these stories. I think it'll sort of feel the same way, I think, in the sense of, like, just more joy. One of the things I'm excited about is even just, like, more baseball, I think really getting into sort of the mastery and the mechanics, more exploration of kind of like these sort of female journeys and queer journeys, just really more in a deeper, nuanced way, which is like sort of the exciting thing you can do in a second season, because you have an audience that's already sort of picking up what you're putting down and can sort of follow you as you take a step sort of deeper into the woods and deeper into the journey. You already are sharing a shorthand and an investment in these characters, which means you can go to, like, even more fun and specific places.
A League of Their Own, co-created and executive produced by Abby Jacobson, who also plays the role of Carson in the series, and Will Graham. It's a production of Amazon Studios, Sony Pictures Television, and Field Trip Productions. It's now running on Prime Video, available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, as that includes Amazon Prime TV. That's Amazon Fire TV, I should say, smart TV sets and devices. For more details about the program online, you can go to two places, Amazon.com or PrimeVideo.com. That's Amazon.com or PrimeVideo.com. A League of Their Own, now playing on smart TV sets and devices. Anyway, Desta Tedros, I'm going to make sure I have this right. Here we go. Desta Tedros,
right.
There we go. Desta, thank you so much for being on the program. Congratulations to you and everybody involved for making this series happen, and hopefully you have a great long run in store.
We appreciate that. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Desta. Take care. Have a sensational rest of your week, you and everybody in your cast and crew.
You too. Bye.
Desta Tedros Ruff joining us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. And when we come back, we have one more great guest coming your way. The Emmy-nominated Bridgerton director, Julie Ann Robinson. She is one of the most in-demand in the world of episodic television in her craft on both sides of the Atlantic, and she currently is getting ready to showcase her latest work, Partner Track, that premieres a week from Friday on Netflix. She will also join us live in Los Angeles after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogsofradio.com, speaker.com, tunein.com, together reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out January Jones. She's always on the go when it comes to showcasing women, successful they are. The January Jones Show, Next episode, Friday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, The January Jones Show. That's Friday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, right here exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best to be charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of what has been an amazing two-hour Tomorrow Be Televised on this Wednesday afternoon of 2022. Tom Abbott with you live from New Weather, York, 78 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Happy you are along for the third of our four episodes this week. And if you have a question or comment for our final guest of the day, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our final guest today is someone who is one of the most in-demand directors in episodic television on both sides of the Atlantic, here in the United States and in Great Britain. Last year, she won an Emmy nomination for directing the opening episode of a little mega classic called Bridgerton. In fact, she has worked quite a lot with the person behind Bridgerton, Shonda Rhimes, on shows like Scandal, Grey's Anatomy, and Private Practice. And we could spend the whole 2 hours that we've had today on all of her shows that she's been involved with. Here's among some of them: Massive Sex on Nurse Jackie on Showtime, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Manhattan on WGN America, Orange the New Black, one of my favorite Showtime promos of recent years on Becoming a God in Central Florida, and her latest work will be seen starting this Friday on Netflix. It's Partner Track, the legal drama whose executive producer and showrunner Georgia Lee will be on this program next Monday, and it was produced here in New York. Joining us live from Los Angeles in our final inter-rating exclusive, Julianne Robinson. Julianne, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure. What do you make of the fact that you are such in demand on both sides of the Atlantic for your work?
That's very nice of you to say. I don't know what to say. It's nice. It's nice to be able to pick, you know, what I want to do and just be really thoughtful about the choices that I make. That's the biggest thing that I notice about it, you know, and just make sure that I can put out into the world stuff that I want to put out.
How do you make the choices of what you want to do? How do you decide, for example, I'm going to work with Shonda Rhimes on Grey's Anatomy, and then later I'm going to work on Bridgerton that turns out to be one of the biggest mega successes in recent years?
Well, with Bridgerton, it was a no-brainer. I always wanted to do period drama. I haven't done anything so deep period before. And then I knew Chris Van Dusen, who wrote the first two seasons with a room, obviously with Shonda. I'd known him for 15 years. And so when they came to me with that, I was like, yes, I'm in. And I was very lucky because it was Shonda that actually discovered me out of the UK. I directed something in the UK called Viva Blackpool, which got quite a lot of traction years and years and years ago. And Shonda and Bessie at Shondaland saw that show, really loved it, and decided to give me an opportunity on the little show that they had called Grey's Anatomy. And that was very on in the Grey's Anatomy days. So I got lucky. I got lucky with my first show in the U.S. I remember I was really scared because in the U.K. it's much smaller scale industry. So I came over, and when I walked up the set to Grey's Anatomy, and they were huge, I was absolutely terrified. And the showrunner just saw my face, and he said to me, "You can be scared today, but tomorrow you're going to work." That's such a showbiz story.
What's it like working with a kind of TV entrepreneur like Shonda Rhimes, who, like, can do no wrong, it seems, in television?
I think it's just a learning experience all the time. You're learning. She's obviously a visionary, and I feel very privileged to have had the opportunities that I have had working with her. And I think the thing that I really love about her is that she understands the emotions inside the situations where things are set. So you can look at Grey's Anatomy, Inventing Anna, you can look at Bridgerton, but what's important to Shonda are the personal, emotional communication between these characters, the complicated layers and structures that she creates within that. she never forgets that that's what people watch for.
Mm-hmm.
I think normally, you do your job, by the way. How do you live? I mean, it's just incredible. How do you do it?
Thank you, Julia. I tell you, it's guests like you. You are only as good as a host interviewing people. You're only as good as your guests. If your guests are good, you're good. And the key is to hopefully tap into like what has the guests tick, to give them a platform for an extended interview where you don't interrupt them every so often for commercials. And I think also the fact that in the case of this program, which we've done now for over 15 years, that Blog Talk Radio gives us great editorial freedom. They trust us to showcase all sorts of television and sometimes controversial subjects, like what we had earlier with Peter Kosminski and his series, The Undeclared War, that deals with cyber-terrorism.
Yeah. Well, I'm really impressed.
Thank you. Thank you so much. One thing that really hits me is, what's it like to be a director in episodic television that isn't pigeonholed? You know, I read your list of credits. You've done comedy series, you've done dramas, you've done historical dramas, you've done offbeat dramas like Pushing Daisies for ABC, or a show like a prison drama like Orange, a dramedy like Orange the New Black. It seems you've avoided the stereotype of when you're an episodic director, you either are big in comedy, or you're big in drama, or you're big in westerns, and yet you can't do anything else.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question, and it is something that I've worked very, very hard on. When I first came over, I had directed an hour drama with comedic overtones, and it was also a musical, and that was a BAFTA-nominated drama. But when I came over, I was told, you are a comedy director. Now, I had never directed comedy, but people watching it from America thought, gosh, well, that's more of a comedy than a drama, even though in England it's called a drama. So I was launched into comedies. And so it's quite ironic. One of the first things I did over here was direct a half-hour comedy, which I kept on telling everybody, I've never directed a half-hour. I've never done this before. And it was like, you'll be fine. So I was launched into comedy when I first arrived. And it was Shonda, actually. At the same time, Shonda gave me, you know, Grey's Anatomy. But I did a lot of comedy initially because comedy shoots in L.A., and I had a young family, and I didn't want to leave L.A. I didn't want to literally shoot anything more than 15 minutes from my front door. So I was lucky I lived close to various studios in Burbank. I was close to CBS, ABC, NBC. And so I tended to shoot mainly comedies. I was so lucky because I worked with kind of the cream of the cream in terms of the comedy world. I did Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I did Parks and Rec. I did The Good Place. But then as my kids got older, I was able to leave town. What probably a lot of people don't realize is there's not that much in terms of our dramas that shoot in L.A. We call that in town in L.A. And so I was able to leave for extended periods as my kids got older and they needed me around less. And so that's why I made the effort to go back into our dramas. And I've got to say, there's a couple of people that I will give a shout out for letting me do that. One of them is Tommy Schlamme, who I don't know if you know, who of course you know who he is. You know, a great, great man who gave me the opportunity to go and work on a show called Manhattan, which I absolutely loved, which was an hour in that I shot in New Mexico. And then, of course, Shonda, who gave me Scandal, which again got me back into the hour drama side. And so I've juggled it. I personally, I love not being pigeonholed. Sometimes it's hard. Because people think, say I've just done Bridgerton and that's huge, and people think, well, you know, she's not going to want to do or be able to do, you know, a hard-hitting thriller, you know, or a science fiction piece. And it's just constantly pushing the boundaries and saying, no, I can do that. This is what I want to do next. And just constantly reinventing yourself.
Incidentally, we had one of the executive producers of Manhattan on our show when it was on WGN America. It was a wonderful series. And it also won an Emmy Award. It was one of the few that WGN America won and was for the opening title of that. It was a great opening title, incidentally, of that series.
Who did you talk to?
I don't think it was Thomas. It may have been one of the other executive producers.
Yeah. It was maybe Dusty. I just loved that show so much. It was so well written and it was hidden. You know, it was one of those ones, like another show that I directed was Big Love, and it just never got the love that it deserved from the industry, it seems like, at the time. There's certain ones that kind of go under the radar that are beloved in the industry, and then they don't get the credit perhaps that they deserve, and one of those was Manhattan, another one Big Love.
Incidentally, Big Love, which was an HBO series that ran for several seasons, was just highlighted on an episode of the $100,000 Pyramid here in the United States on ABC. It was actually part of a subject which dealt with things beginning with the word big, and the person didn't get it. It's amazing. The team that had that subject did not get that one. Absolutely amazing.
Well, you see, it was a great show. It was a great show. Bill Paxton, of course.
It was. And those people remember it on HBO during its run, still remember it fondly. It was one of the best ever. And a groundbreaker, big groundbreaker in that time. We're speaking with Julianne Robinson. She is the Emmy-nominated director of Bridgerton, which will be going to its third season next year on Netflix. Also, the spinoff, Queen Charlotte, will also be coming out in 2023. And tomorrow we'll talk to you about her latest work, which will be on Netflix Friday. It's Partner Track, which was produced here in New York. And that's one of three shows that will be coming from her that you'll be seeing in the coming months. Julianne joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Sometime I'm with you live also from the other side of the U.S. of A., namely New York, 78 degrees right at the moment. If you have a question or comment for Julianne, make the phone go, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And as I mentioned earlier, Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we will have Georgia Lee. She is the showrunner and executive producer of Partner Track on our program as one of our guests. We'll also talk to her about a very interesting Writers Collective project she has started at Netflix with other writers and creators of color to try to encourage more series produced by people of color at Netflix and elsewhere. So we'll talk to you about that as well. Plus, there's a brand new plumbing service available on smart TV sets and devices started recently called Momentu, M-O-M-E-T-U. We'll talk to you next about the service, which is trying to show film and TV shows from around the world, Brian Lozelle and Charles Angelis. That's coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Talk about Partner Track, which is coming to Netflix a week from Friday, based here in New York. How'd you get involved with that series?
Well, obviously after Bridgerton, I was sent a lot of things, and I thought maybe I should just give up directing because I'm never going to do anything as big as Bridgerton ever again. Now is the time for me to stop. And I just didn't know what to do. And then my manager, Sam Warren, sent me this script, and he said, I think you should take the script seriously. I was like, really, a legal drama? I don't know. And I read it, and I thought, oh, gosh, you know what? There's something really, really cool about this. To be honest, the reason why I decided to go for it, really go for it, was after meeting Georgia, who you're going to be lucky enough to meet on Monday. You'll see. You'll just totally get it as soon as you meet her. She's the kindest person, and she's the most talented person, and I just thought, right, I want to be in business with this person. This is a quietly important show. I want what I do, what I put out in the world to be meaningful in whatever way it will be, and this has the potential for that. So that's why I got involved. A long answer. There you go.
No problem. And it's based on an acclaimed novel by Helen Wan. It is about a Asian American woman who is trying to work her way up the ladder at a legal firm here in the Big Apple that has sort of old school ways. Was there something about the novel or about the scripts that touch that off, the idea of the person trying to, the person of color trying to get on an upwardly mobile track and try to stay, you know, with integrity through what she deals with.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as I was saying earlier about Shonda, you know, the way, it's what drives these characters that fascinates me. It's what that internal driver is. And definitely, you know, Ingrid Yun has that drive, has that passion, and it's that kind of drives us through the series. Obviously, excellently played by Arden, the lovely Arden Cho. And it was a real blast to shoot this right in the heart of New York. Day, night, it was a joy. I always love shooting in New York, and this time was no exception.
What was it like working with Arden? I saw the trailer for the series, and I've also read her biography in Wikipedia. This is somebody who, again, might be another one of the breakout stars of this year, and this is somebody whose life has had a whale of a lot of ups and downs, and is also a quadruple threat. Singer, actually a five threat. Singer, she plays all sorts of musical instruments. She's a dancer. She's an actress. She's a model. And again, this is somebody who has had some incredible ups and downs off the camera.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you a story about Arden that kind of sums her up. We were on set, and we were racing to get the day done. It was very stressful. People don't – I think it's hard to communicate sometimes what you know, how up against the clock you often are and how responsible you feel for, you know, making sure the crew goes home, being fiscally responsible. So Arden, normally actors go back to a trailer to get changed for a scene. And we were all lit. We were ready to go. We just needed Arden to get changed. If Arden had decided to go back to her trailer to get changed, we would have gone over. I'll just get changed in here. So we got everybody off the set. She got changed in like 2 minutes flat, and we shot the scene. And less than 2 minutes, I would say 30 seconds, so she's just such a trooper. That is completely typical of her. If I would say to her, Arden, you know, we're on set. We need to gather a few more people. She would personally go around and say, come on, everybody, we're on set. Let's go. She's a real, I mean, I just absolutely love that about her. She's a real, got such fantastic team spirit. And she, you know, if you have a number one like that, you're in good shape, in my experience.
And again, we will have Georgia Lee, the executive producer and showrunner of Partner Track, which begins a week from Friday, August 26th on Netflix. She will be on our show Monday. I'm looking forward to continuing the conversation about what she's doing and about Arden. Again, after seeing the trailer, I think Arden is headed for great things, super things. By the way, it's not her first TV experience. Some people who remember the MTV series Teen Wolf will remember her as one of the – she was originally a guest star, and then she became an ongoing character for that MTV series. By the way, in your career, you have directed a lot of very interesting actresses. Lizzie Kaplan on Masters of Sex on Showtime, Edie Falco on Nurse Jackie, the cast of Orange is the New Black on Netflix, Ellen Pompeo on Grey's Anatomy, Christina Applegate on Becoming a God in Florida. What's it like to direct so many women in so many different kinds of TV situations?
You know, it's really hard to generalize. I would say I come from a theater background. I was a theater director before I came into TV. And what I try to do is meet people where I find them. Everybody has a different history. All the actors have got, like, different levels of training. They've all got, you know, different – I find that actors just generally like – some of them like very little direction. Some of them like to get a lot of feedback. And I try to meet people as I find them. So it's hard to say in general, but I will say in general, these people that you're talking about are incredibly hard workers. they are great leaders, and, you know, they come to set with this can-do attitude, and they inhabit the set, you know, they kind of own it, they own it. And that is one generalization that I can make.
Mm-hmm. Let's not forget also Kerry Washington, the star of Scandal as well. Dan Robinson's with us until near the top of the hour here on Tomorrow Be Televised. If you have a question or comment or many moments with her, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04. You have two more shows that are coming in the months ahead. One is a musical show, a musical drama. It's called History of a Pleasure Seeker. That is with Hulu. What's that all about?
That, I can't talk too much about it because we're still in post-production for that, but I would like to take those shows that a lot of other people think that's too insane for me. I'm not going to do that one. So this one was set in 1907 in Amsterdam and is a musical. So, there's for a director, there's many, many layers of complexity there immediately. And, so it was such fun to do. Working with the choreographers, working with the composer, lovely composer Chris Reed. It was a joy to do. And I just love creating these kind of, I'm lucky enough to, you know, who wouldn't want my job? I go around English country houses, beautiful houses, and I get to pick which ones I want to film in and work with gorgeous materials, building, clothing. Who wouldn't want that job, really? I'm very, very lucky. Working in beauty, in real beauty, that is, I think, you know, creating something that pleases the eye that people want to watch.
And the other show you're working on, going back to Peacock, which we featured earlier with Peter Kaczynski for The Undeclared War, is a show called Hyde, H-I-D-E, which I understand is a takeoff on that classic tale, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. H.
It's very much in development at the moment. Yes, I worked with NBC very closely for 4 years. I had a deal there for 4 years, and that is one amongst many projects that I'm lucky enough to be developing with Peacock, and I'm super excited about it. I'm working on it with an old friend of mine, David Tennant, who is, in my opinion, the greatest ever Doctor Who, for those Doctor Who fans out there. Oh, gosh, I'm going to set off. I'm sure there'll be people that disagree with that, but he's a friend. What can I say?
Yeah. And he's great. So is Tom Baker. So is Patrick. Everybody who loves. I love Doctor Who. Everything about it. And I'm happy it's still going strong on both sides of the Atlantic.
Yes.
And incidentally, before we go, you have your own production company, and you're also developing shows in England. But are you looking at maybe taking some of those projects and originating them here in the United States?
Yes. We work transatlantically. That's called Longboat Pictures. I work with a great exec in the UK called Victoria Fee, responsible for, amongst other things, Martella. And I'm very lucky to be in business with her. And, yes, we work on both sides of the Atlantic with Longboat. We have a deal with Sky in the UK. Sky are great partners.
And before you go, if Chandra calls you up and says, I'd like you to direct at least an episode of Queen Charlotte, do you hop to where that's going to be going and get an episode under your belt?
maybe. I think Tom Verica, who I love and adore, has got that sewn up. He's doing every episode. But I'm sure it's fantastic. That's just such great. The opportunity to kick off what's effectively a franchise now was a huge opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Again, you can catch Julianne Robinson's latest work starting a week from Friday on Netflix. It's the opening episode of Partner Track, produced here in New York. And you can find out more about that at Netflix.com. And again, we will have Georgia Lee, the executive producer and showrunner of the series, on this program this coming Monday. Julianne Robinson, thank you again for a delightful half hour. Congratulations on your tremendous range of accomplishments as a director in episodic television. Good luck with Partner Track, the other shows you're doing. We would love to have you back. It has been a grand pleasure having
you
aboard.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's so fun talking to you.
Same here, Julianne. Take care. Have a fantastic week ahead. All the greatest.
Thank you. Bye.
Director Julianne Robinson, Emmy nominee also, by the way, for Bridgerton. She was also a nominee for the Directors Guild of America Award for that opening episode, and she's also been nominated for BAFTA, which is the British version of the Emmys and the Oscars for television and film. Thank you to all of our guests for being with us today and all of you for tuning in. This has been a one. We told you this was going to be must-hear radio, and it certainly turned out to be that way. Friday on Tomorrow We Televise, the final of our four episodes this week. Leading things off will be Mei Chan, the co-developer, executive producer, writer, showrunner of the brand new Apple TV Plus series based on the popular comic Surfside Girls. Then, Plex Vice President of Strategic Alliances and Content, Sean Eldridge, talking about the brand new Hill Channel with the Hill's general manager, Jason Zielinski. And finally, talking about the current and future of the TV Western series, True West Entertainment editor, Henry Park. If you came in late on today's episode, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our podcast, available 24/7 at iTunes, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, podcast.google.com, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, all sorts of other podcast destinations, and our website, 24/7, tomorrowwillbetelevised.onpodium.com. I'd love to hear from you. What do you think about our program today? What's your thoughts about where TV's at and where it's going? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Wherever you communicate with me, I respond back to you within 24 hours. That is our promise to you. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants. They are not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toe is BTR General Manager. Dave Sonnenberg is Head of Content. Website service provided by On Podium, the internet's new podcast outpost. Guitarist Vakas is our web coordinator. But tomorrow we televise. I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. We are back with you for our final 90-minute edition of this week. That's Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, and all of our podcast destinations and our website. Whatever you're doing between now and then, make it safe. Please make it great, no matter where you are. And if you haven't been vaccinated, see your doctor. Check your medical situation. Find out about all the alternative treatments available to you right now, including the Merck and Pfizer pills. They're available in many pharmacies around the country. In many cases, we'll have a prescription and free of charge to you. And then, make a great choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.